This is Wells Tech, a show that explores the intersection of technology and ministry. Wells Tech is a part of the Streams Media Network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. Welcome back, everybody, to Wells Tech. This is episode 473 for Tuesday, November 29th, 2016. My name is Martin Spriggs, and this is a show about technology and ministry. In fact, this particular show is focused on educational technology and helping me discuss the ins and outs of that and other things. Sally Draper, as usual. Hey, Sally, how are you?
I am great, Martin. How are you today?
Excellent, excellent. How are things across the river?
Oh, we're maintaining over here. We got our bellies full for Thanksgiving, had a lot of nice family time, so all good. Good report.
Very good. And as we do each and every month when we talk about educational technology, we call in reinforcements. Last month, we had Jason Schmidt, and this month we have Rachel Feld, who returns and joins us. Must not have been too bad 2 months ago when you joined us last time, Rachel. You're back again.
I am back again, and I'm excited to have the full team here, so that'll be great.
That's right. We were on a skeleton crew last time. Sally was not able to join us, so it was just me and Rachel. But we muddled through somehow, but now we are in full strength talking about educational technology. For those who don't know Rachel or didn't tune in 2 months ago when she was on the show last, Rachel is a first grade teacher from Bethany. Do I have it right?
Bethany and Kenosha, first and second grade.
Which is down there near the border, right?
Yep.
Very good. How long have you been there, Rachel?
This is my 11th year of teaching, and I've been here for 11 years. I was assigned here out in New Ulm.
We call you a veteran teacher at this point, and we look forward to the technology expertise that you bring to the table as well. It's kind of neat to have a lower grade teacher join us as well. So the technology is a little bit different, but what are we talking about this week?
Well, we are returning to the NMC, New Media Consortium, Horizon Report for kindergarten through 12th grade. They recently released the report, and this is a report that it's kind of a think tank group that looks at the future of education technology and things that are on the horizon, thus the name. And one of the things that they identified as something that is very happening right now, time to adoption is 1 year or less, is makerspaces, kind of a hot topic in education technology, just in education in general. You hear a lot about this these days. I had a friend recently contact me and ask me how to start a makerspace at their public library. So not just schools, but libraries and other community groups and locations are getting in the makerspace space.
So I'll ask the dumb question. I'll play the dumb guy here on the podcast, as I normally do. What is a maker space?
And, you know, that's probably the million-dollar question that this podcast will debunk, because it can be defined so many different ways. It's a place for 21st century learning. It's a place to give people the environment, the tools, the resources that they need to design, to make things, to be creative, and to learn from the iterative process. So many times when people design things, it doesn't go well the first or second or 20th time, and it takes time to refine it and stuff. And so it's a hands-on approach to learning, and very much 21st century. And maybe, Rachel, from your perspective, would you agree with my definition, add to it?
When I explained it to parents last week, I told them it was a space where you make stuff. And I definitely agree with the 21st century learning and learning those skills of trying and being persistent and not giving up. And, you know, changing your ideas a little bit so that you can come up with some sort of product that fits fixes a problem or is a solution to something.
Right. I think nowadays you hear of a lot of them having things like 3D printers and Arduinos or other mini computer kind of gadgets that you can build with, but makerspaces don't have to be that. I guess if we were defining it, we would just say they have to have resources for people to make things with, but it doesn't have to be technology-related resources. It can be pipe cleaners or my son went to I think it was a math counts competition, and they gave them spaghetti and marshmallows to build a bridge out of. And so pretty much anything will do, recycled things will do or whatever.
Yeah, definitely. When I, we worked a little bit with it last week in leading up to Thanksgiving, and I went to the dollar store and bought a cart full of random stuff. And I'm pretty sure the people in line behind me were like, what is she doing with like five rolls of foil and tape and glue and felt and pretty much anything that you could make something out of. It doesn't have to be high tech and it doesn't have to be expensive.
Right. So and you can do it at all different ages too. Sorry, Martin, you go ahead.
No, it's okay. So let me ask a follow-up question. How much direction is provided then? Is the whole point to kind of let their imaginations run wild with the materials and resources that you provide? Provide some direction, guidelines, rules? What's the, walk me through how this might work?
Well, I would say at least my experience, you do give them some type of goal, but beyond that, you let them go walk, do their own thing. So maybe your space is designed around, creating things for your school science fair or whatever it is, some type of goal that you give them, and then they build around that. But then the next time you use your makerspace, it might have a different theme to it. Rachel, maybe you could tell us a few more details about what your makerspace event was last week.
Sure. We have the Wednesday before Thanksgiving, we always do a grandparents and special persons day. And so we always do some sort of fun craft or something with them. And I wanted some experience with makerspace to share with everyone. So I thought that was a perfect opportunity. And I found on Teachers Pay Teachers a set of task cards that were all Thanksgiving based. So it was things like make a cage for the turkey, make a new gravy boat, make a hat for a pilgrim, all sorts of different things. And basically the kids got to pick out one of the cards, whichever one they wanted to be working on, and then they got to have at it with all the different random stuff I had drum up from the dollar store and from around school, because you know, I just opened my art cabinet and who knows what comes out. So it was really fun. The kids really enjoyed it.
Part of me thinks it's kind of like an art project, but it's very open-ended. I have a few pictures that you shared from the event. This one says, design a basket that will travel down a zip line to deliver food for the feast. So this young man used pipe cleaners to design that basket.
Grandma did it.
I hope nothing falls out in the process. what else do you have? Construct a bridge that will hold the most potatoes. So they have a bridge here. Did you test it out with potatoes? Or
we did not. That wouldn't probably have not held potatoes, but she was proud of it nonetheless.
Very good. Design a new gardening tool to help the pilgrims grow their crops.
Yeah, that one was actually, it was really fun to listen to this little girl, and I believe it was her aunt that was with her. And her aunt actually started a conversation, well, what kind of crops would the pilgrims grow? What would you need to help with the growing of those crops? So she was able to tell her aunt, well, they grew corn, and this is how corn grows, so this is the kind of tool that we need.
Cool. Some smart thinking there. And then create a pilgrim hat you can wear on your head. And this young lady has a lovely hat on her head. So
yes, which is wild.
Fun. So the kids got the, I guess beyond if it were art related or art kind of tools related, they got to choose their direction and they didn't have any examples to go by or anything. So using their own brain power and tapping into their special people, obviously, did some creating.
what was really interesting to watch was the adults who were looking for directions or looking for, well, I don't know how that's going to work or that we can't do it that way. And the kids just going, oh, no, no, this will be fine. We just need a lot of tape here. And let's pour some glue here and it'll be fine. And the kids, you know, they kind of didn't have the same fear that the grown-ups did going forward. But then at the same time, the kids would get to a spot where it really didn't work. And they had a much harder time, you know, adjusting their thought process or their design process, where the grown-ups were better at, okay, well, that's not working, so let's try it this way instead. So it really just kind of showed what kind of skills you can learn from that kind of activity.
Seems like a blend. What you're describing is really a blend of left brain, right brain thinking, mm-hmm. where there's that creative vision and then there's the engineering that needs to be applied to it once you want to try and realize that vision or you get stuck and you need to troubleshoot around things. So where's the spaces part? So do you have a dedicated area within a classroom, a learning center? You know, what makes it a space, or is it kind of a movable temporary thing depending on what the objective is?
There are some schools that have like whole classrooms devoted to that. I do not have that luxury, so I just have a tub of stuff that you can take out whenever. I believe we read about a school district that had a bus that they had outfitted for as a makerspace that was going from school to school. And I was thinking that'd be cool for some of our area Lutheran high schools if they had a bus they didn't want anymore to outfit it that way and take it to the kids. That would be a really cool thing to do.
Neat.
Definitely. Yeah, I was going to mention the bus thing, too. I want to ride on that bus or drive that bus. That would be a fun job.
How are makerspaces tied to the curriculum, or are they?
Good question. And I'm not sure any of my reading specifically spoke to that. Maybe it did, and I'm drawing a blank. Certainly, it's higher level thinking skills, the collaborative, and I would think that's in the new the code that everybody's having to comply with. I'm drawing a blank now. Yeah, there you go. I would think those skills are very much outlined in Common Core, and you're demonstrating it with these kind of activities.
I think one of the struggles with integrating something like this is that it doesn't line up nicely with math or reading or even really science when you think about, okay, I need to teach my kids about plants and animals and the weather. So kind of you have to change your thinking as a teacher a little bit and see how you can be meeting those standards in a different way. And you're maybe going to have to, you know, stop doing some of those things you're used to doing to make space for this to happen in your classroom.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like there's also need to be, at least where there's departmentalization, some collaboration amongst mm-hmm. faculty members to make this thing work, certainly if it's, you know, if it crosses disciplines like that.
Yep.
Well, we've got resources out there, right? So what is available to somebody who's thinking about this but doesn't quite know where to start?
Yep. That's what I was just going to jump to, Martin, and I'll just share my screen in the process. So probably a great place to start is just the short 2-page article that's part of this Horizon report from the New Media Consortium. So they've dedicated pages 36 and 37 in the 2016 report to makerspaces. It'll give you a little bit of background information, and then they actually include links to things in practice, so people that are actually doing it, and further reading on the topic. One that I thought was particularly interesting, a recent article titled 4 Steps to Planning a Successful Makerspace. And the article starts out kind of a little bit scary territory because they talk about schools that have dedicated rooms to makerspaces, and they're very excited about them the first few weeks, and then they're sitting silent and gathering dust. And so they're kind of taking it from that perspective of what they've learned from failed makerspaces. So I think there's some good lessons to learn here. Understand your learners, assess existing programs, consider global trends and best practices, develop and update themes. That's kind of what I was talking about, where you might have a Lego challenge, they mention, or something like that. Just different themes so that you're not always static in your makerspace. You're giving people new challenges and things to explore. And then one that Rachel found, maybe Rachel, you want to speak to this one. This is actually an infographic from ISTE, I think, about creating a makerspace in your school. It's pretty simple and straightforward, but they share four steps for doing that.
Yeah, and what I liked was that it was so simple and straightforward. You don't need to have a bunch of fancy stuff. You know, it says secure a space. Well, it doesn't have to be a whole room. You could do a closet or big Tupperware container. You need stuff. And it talks right away about 3D printers and that kind of stuff, but dollar store stuff works just as well too. And then you need kids to do stuff in it. And I think the really nice part is it can be seasonal. That's a great way to find some different themes. You can do, you know, whatever is kind of popular in the media or whatever your kids are really interested in. And then I really like this last step about going digital and sharing the projects, because that's really important too, that kids can have the experience and the ability to share and explain something that they've done. So whatever project they've made, they can, you know, make a little presentation on how it fixed the problem that they were working on. And I mean, that's a huge life skill to be able to explain yourself well and to present in front of people.
Just like the young lady with her corn tool, huh?
Yes.
Cool. Yeah. And I guess my impression is you were describing the students and then their special person and their different perspectives, right brain, left brain, whatever it is that if we allow them to learn this way at such a young age, they're going to develop both those sets of skills. They're not going to be inhibited to show their creativity, to think outside the box and do crazy things and see where it leads them. And then they'll also learn that iterative process along the way. And so that they'll have skills that are beyond what we have, because we didn't have maker spaces to play in when I was a kid. So,
well, we had cardboard boxes. So
there you go.
Mud and sticks, my in-laws would always say. Mud and sticks we had. So it strikes, one of the things that struck me in reading the article and just kind of talking through this now is that it really, you mentioned younger kids, but I think it's K to 12, you know, all the way up and down, you know, that spectrum where the ability to create these spaces and have them utilized well, if planned well, is a possibility. And I think some of the resources we've come up with will address, you know, all along that that age group. So I don't think it's restricted to, you know, just kind of playing, you know, playtime or something with younger kids, but certainly all the way up to into high school.
So we would be very interested if any of our listeners have makerspaces happening in their schools or are in a summer program or whatever it may be. We'd love to hear about your experience and share it with others. So please do add a comment on the webpage or send us an email or a voicemail. We'd love to hear from you.
Very good. Good discussion. Makerspaces. Check them out. Mm-hmm. Let's move along in our show to the next segment, which is our news in tech. And with Black Friday behind us and Cyber Monday or whatever, there's a lot of stuff out there, a lot of tech out there, and some emerging markets. One of those is kind of the smart home space, and Google has an entrant in that space now called Google Home. It looks like a little air freshener that they recently launched, but it's a competitor to Amazon's Alexa. The reason that I bring it up now is that you see them everywhere. They're on store shelves. I saw a bunch at Best Buy the other day. and at a discount. So they are, I think they're selling for under $50, $49, and I've seen them even cheaper in some locations. And these are little digital assistants that can both control your smart home, but also answer questions, just like Google Now can on your smartphone. So these are pretty easy to get into and, you know, bring into the home and see if that would make a difference in improving your workflow at all. But Google Home is now on the market and seems like it's been well received so far. You guys looked at this at all?
This is not on my list yet, so maybe it's time. The price point is definitely coming down, and the whole Internet of Things, the connected home and all of that, I haven't really gotten real deep into that, but I could see a lot of advantages, especially just having somebody to talk to when you're home alone.
And I've heard that that is a thing, that people are turning to that if they do live alone, and there's some good things about that, I think, too.
Interesting.
So, let's move to Wells Now. What is in the news in Wells circles? Because we are coming up on the holiday season, what we normally do when we reach that time of the year is relaunch our seasonal radio channel. And we have something called Wells Radio Seasonal. And we have other channels there too, contemporary, instrumental, children's songs, traditional. But this time of year, we play Christmas music, and you can find that in a number of different venues or a number of different locations on the internet. One is by going to wells.net and looking under news and media, and you can find the channels there and play them right from there. We also have these available in a couple of different kind of platforms that provide streaming content. One of them is TuneIn Radio. And TuneIn Radio has both recorded content and also these live radio channels. So you can just search for Wells Radio there. Stitcher is another place where you can get this information. And then finally, if you use the Wells mobile app, you can find Wells Radio there. Just look under the seasonal channel, and you can hear that stuff playing as well. So we put a lot of energy into this, and these are all Wells musicians. So some are instrumental, some are not instrumental. So depending on what your situation is, if you're in an office setting or whatever office environment, you need to recognize that what it is and isn't. But that is available now and should be available through the new year. And then once Lent comes around, we change the music that plays on the seasonal channel, and we get Lent and Easter music again from Wells musicians. So just keep that in mind if you're looking for music to play, you know, while you're working around the house, doing preparations for a company, gift opening, whatever. This would be something that you could tune into and feel good about the music that's playing there. So
awesome.
Radio Seasonal. I think that brings us to our tips and or picks of the week segment. Rachel, you bringing something to the show today?
Of course. My second favorite website behind Pinterest. My
totally outnumbered here.
You are, I'm sorry.
Okay.
Is Teachers Pay Teachers, which I don't know how long it's been around, but I've been using it for about the past 3 years. And basically, any teacher can post their curriculum stuff that they've made, worksheets, unit plans, all sorts of really cool stuff, and you can buy it. And now is a really good time to buy it because stuff is on sale. But usually it's, you know, $2, $3. I've bought some more expensive stuff that I use throughout the year, but it's just wonderful supplementary stuff, especially in the areas of science and social studies, where for my grades, I find that the curricular stuff we get isn't always age appropriate or very exciting. So that's where I found the holiday makerspace cards. I just put makerspace in the top and Thanksgiving, and they were, I think, like $4 or $5. And you get your download, you can print it out, and you are set to go. It saves all the things that you have downloaded over the years, and if you give reviews, you get a certain number of points back, and then you can use those points to buy more things. So it'll also print out a list of how much money you have spent, in case you want to know that. I'm very afraid of printing out that list because this website is my friend.
They've got good stuff.
They do. I'm thinking of doing a Christmas one like that for our Christmas party. Because usually we watch a movie or whatever, but I thought that might be a little more exciting for them to do.
Well, that's nice to hear that you're willing to try it again. So the Thanksgiving one must have been a success. And if you buy it now, Rachel, they've got a cyber sale on. Only 6 more hours, though.
I know.
Under pressure. Rachel, have you ever considered putting something up on the site as well? So not only can you buy stuff, but you can post stuff.
Yeah, I have. You know, I feel that at this point I'm focusing on some other things, but I do have some plans for after I graduate for some ideas with Martin Luther, because there isn't much on there about Martin Luther. You get Martin Luther King Jr. If you search for Luther. So I've got some ideas, but you're all going to have to wait a few years.
I was going to say, you better hurry up, because 500th anniversary is the perfect time to launch that.
Maybe this summer I'll get to it.
And for those people not familiar with it, what is kind of the price range that you see on the site?
There's free stuff. So you can click the free button and it'll only show you free stuff. But most of the stuff that I buy is the $3 to $7 range. So really not bad, because you can use it year after year and for as many kids as you need to.
Perfect. Sounds like a great resource.
Awesome.
Very good. Sally, can we move on to your pick of the week?
Yes, this is the pick that keeps on giving, because I have about 20 screens open here to share with you. So be warned in advance. Not really. I am going to use as my pick Maker Faire at makerfaire.com. I first heard about Maker Faire one summer. Google sponsored a Maker Camp, and it was through this Maker Faire organization, which is actually an offshoot of Make Magazine. And basically, Maker Faires are held around the country, and they have building areas, so the maker spaces are set up at these two-day events, but they're also kind of showcasing people that have neat stuff for you to make with, so vendor areas and things like that as well. One of the reasons I heard about it in particular is one of the regional ones is held in Milwaukee, and at the Milwaukee one they do a GE Design and Build Challenge, where groups of people 16 or older can represent a team, can be a team representing a school, a business, a corporation, whatever, just individuals that come together, and they show up there, they give them a challenge and some materials, and they compete within like 3 hours or so as to how well theirs was built. And for the last 2 years, they've held this in Milwaukee, and the Shoreland Lutheran High School team has won both Maker Faire GE Design and Build Challenges that have been held. The first year, the Shoreland team won, and it was really exciting. This past September, just a couple months ago, Shoreland sent two teams there, and they took first and second place. And it came down to like a runoff between them and Marquette's engineering students, and Marquette ended up third. So kudos to Shoreland, their engineering students. I think the goal was to build something that could traverse a course and shoot a laser or something. I don't know. But really exciting stuff to see Shoreland doing so well in this contest and training their students well in their engineering program, because they talk about that in this article, which I'll link to. I said it was the gift that keeps on giving, because I'll include links in the show notes to Maker Camps and School Maker Fairs, so you can do the same kind of thing at your school, like a one-day event that's similar to these big conventions that are being held. There's places to search for your area of the country and find out when the Maker Fairs are going to be held. Just for those of you in the Minnesota area, it's going to be May 14th at the fairgrounds, I believe, that they're going to have a big maker fair here in Minneapolis-St. Paul area. And they have Facebook accounts and Twitter accounts and all kinds of ways that you can follow them and get involved in the maker movement. So you don't have to be in Ms. Feld's class. You can do maker at home or with a group of friends or whatever. In Minneapolis, I know they have maker spaces that adults buy into to be able to go and use some fabricating machines and 3D printers and things like that. So they have shared spaces that you can buy a membership to do your own design and stuff. So it's a pretty big movement. Make Magazine is kind of behind the movement, and they have a regular magazine that you can subscribe to and get ideas for your making projects and things. So all kinds of fun stuff over at makerfair.com.
Very cool. I have to offer a retraction, first of all, on my news item or our news item for the week and talking about Google Home, because it does relate to my pick as well. Google Home, I saw, is on sale for $99.
I thought that's what you had told me.
Down from $129. Yeah.
That's pretty good.
The reason
sale.
That I had $49 stuck in my head is that's what my pick costs, which is a competing product. This is the Amazon Echo Dot. A lot of us are familiar with the Amazon Echo, which is a very tall cylinder, probably 3.5 inches wide and 1 foot tall. Speakers, microphones, you talk to it, you say, you call it by name, Alexa, and then you ask it a question, you make it, give it a command, turn the lights on, turn the temperature up, whatever, what's the weather, etc. The Amazon Echo Dot is a little brother. It is about 1 inch high, about the same diameter, but 1 inch high, and doesn't have as good as speakers, of course, because it's so much smaller, but it's a much smaller price tag. The Amazon Echo costs about $170, I want to say. You can get it on sale, I think, even for less right now. The Echo Dot is $49, and it does exactly the same thing. I think it's got the same set of microphones in it, so it'll hear you from across the room. I have one because I kind of move it back and forth between work and home as I'm trying to program for it and get it to create a, they call them skills for it, that will allow it to play our daily Wells Daily Devotion and through the Bible readings and those kinds of things through it. So I'm working on that. Hopefully by Christmas I can have that out. So I bought this to program against, but it is really a cool device. Very small, unobtrusive. It plugs in via micro USB. You can get around the whole speaker thing. The Amazon Echo has great speakers. This not so much, but this has an auxiliary jack that you can plug into an external speaker system or through Bluetooth. So you can connect this to a Bluetooth speaker, and we've talked about a number of those on the show in the past, that'll give you great sound through this, and then you get everything that the Echo provides with its interactivity and smartness, and you still get the good speaker system as well for a much lower price. Very portable, unobtrusive, comes in black or white. So if you don't like either one of those, you're kind of stuck, but black or white, and they are available on Amazon.com. You can get them in the you can get them in Best Buy. I think they're $49 wherever you look. So the Amazon Echo Dot, $49, if you're looking just to kind of dip your toe in the water of these smart home assistants, this might be a good starting point at one of the lower cost points for some of these devices. So.
All right. You'll have to give us an update as you make progress towards having the Wells content on there.
Yep. Plus, I bought my first smart light bulb the other day, so I'm playing with that a little bit and got it to work. So we have one light in the kitchen that actually can be controlled by one of these guys or my smartphone. But so that's a work in progress. So we'll see where that goes.
Smart light bulbs cost more than regular light bulbs, I'm guessing.
Well, it depends. You've noticed that regular light bulbs cost a lot of money these days. If you LEDs and those kinds of things, there's just so many options. The one I bought cost $29, so yeah, probably more, but it is LED and it has a 22-year guarantee. So
okay.
So these are the kind of bulbs that if you move, you take them with you and put the old bulbs back in. So we'll see. It is an investment to get going, but they should last for a long, long time. So we'll see how it goes.
I've got smart light bulbs in my living room, and I love them.
What kind do you have, Rachel?
I have the Philips Hue.
Okay. Do you have the colored ones or the white ones?
Just the white ones. Okay. But I like that it knows when I come home, and so it, because it's linked to my phone, turns on my lights and starts dimming them when it's time to get ready for bed. So I find it really helpful.
Very cool. Nice. We'll have to compare notes. I did the LifeX. I think it's LIFX bulb, which are very similar. Mm-hmm. So interesting. So more on our smart home developments as we get a little bit further. Let's move on to ministry resources.
And we're going to thank Rachel for our ministry resource this week. She mentioned before what her second favorite website was, and now we're going to get to hear about her first favorite website. Number one on the list is Pinterest.
Oh,
and Rachel has a board dedicated just to Advent, especially on Pinterest. Lots of great stuff here. Plenty of things that you can use in your ministry setting, whatever that might be, public ministry. Use it at home. Use it with children. Use it to decorate. All kinds of great ideas here on Rachel's Advent board on Pinterest.
Yeah, and I'll call attention to, I think it's the top three pins there are from the Concordia Technology blog. And I think one of them's got some pictures that you can use for your social media planning. It's got an Advent photo a day challenge, some ideas there. So that would be a great thing if you're in charge of your school or church's social media to check those out.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
Thanks for putting that together, Rachel, as well.
No problem.
Neat. And thanks for sharing that. All right, featured video.
And our featured video is going to tie back to the pick of the week from me, from Maker Faire. Maker Faire has a series of videos out on YouTube. We're just picking one of them, and it's Getting Going with Your School Maker Faire. So they actually hosted a Google Hangout, had a lot of experts on, and had a conversation around the concept of setting up a school maker faire. So if you're intrigued by that possibility, having a one-day maker faire might be a good way to dip your toe in the water, get some people involved, and get a feel for how it might work in your classroom. So check out the video. We'll have it posted over on Wells Tech, wellstech.wells.net. We post our show notes there every week, and if you scroll down in the show notes, you'll find the video of the week, able to play it right there from the website.
Very nice. That's going to do it for the show this week. Next week, we're going to be talking to somebody from your neck of the woods over there, Sally.
Yeah, we are fortunate to have Professor Bill Peckrell joining us. Bill serves at Martin Luther College, where he is the Director of Public Relations, and Bill's going to be talking to us about church and school promotion. And if I'm guessing many, many of our listeners follow Martin Luther College on Facebook, you'll know that Bill's the brains behind all those great posts and how wonderful it is to follow the goings-on at the college through their Facebook page. And that's just one way that Bill is involved in public relations there, and I'm sure he has lots of good ideas to share with us.
Looking forward to that. Rachel, thanks so much for joining us once again. I hope
you're
come
welcome.
Back in a couple months and join us for another focused show on educational technology. Really appreciate
Absolutely.
Your efforts and your time with us today.
All right.
And Sally, thank you for your time as well. And thank all of you for joining us, listening or watching, whichever your preferred consumption of the show is. We're glad that you joined us. Please share the fact that this is worth tuning into. Share that with friends, family, whoever that might benefit from some of the ministry topics and technology topics that we talk about here on the show each and every week. Please join us next week for show number 474. Thanks for joining us. Have a blessed week and see you next week. Bye-bye.